Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is July the 22nd, and it is wonderful to join you so we could play that game of catch-up. And indeed, there is so much to catch up on. The Republican National Convention having ended yesterday. The Democrats about to begin theirs next week. A terror attack happening in Munich today by individuals of uncertain origins or goals, and on it goes. But Friday evenings is when I like to get together with you so we can look back and try to make sense of the madness that now passes for business as usual in an increasingly wacky and dysfunctional world. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I am a retired senior special agent of the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS, an agency that was dismantled when George W. Bush created the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, as I prefer to refer to it, the Department of Homeland Surrender. Immigration, which was discovered by the 9/11 Commission to have played such an integral role in the ability of terrorists, and not only on 9/11, but other terrorists as well, to enter the United States, carry out or attempt to carry out deadly attacks, hiding in plain sight or in the parlance of that commission, embedding themselves, again, because of multiple failures of the immigration system. And so my objective has been, ever since those attacks, to do everything in my power to provide as many of my fellow Americans as possible with a real-world understanding of the immigration crisis and all of its implications for America and Americans. And let me start out by telling you that my position is not anti-immigrant, but it is pro-enforcement. And if you're pro-enforcement, you are pro-immigrant, because the very same immigration laws that tell us who to keep out and kick out of the United States also permit us to admit more lawful immigrants than the rest of the entire world combined, roughly 1 million per year. And those are folks that are issued green cards signifying that they are immediately placed on the pathway to United States citizenship should they so desire to become Americans when they meet certain residency, literacy, and other requirements. We also admit every year tens of millions of non-immigrant aliens, that is to say aliens who are admitted for a finite period of time, either as tourists or foreign students or foreign workers. There's a whole broad spectrum of visas available to those foreign nationals, aliens, if you will, so they can come here for a temporary visit, and then hopefully, and I do mean hopefully, they will return to their home countries when whatever their lawful and hopefully lawful purposes that brought them here in the first place have been tended to and taken care of. Immigration is not about race, religion, ethnicity, creed, nothing like that. It's simply about keeping out aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases, are severely mentally ill, and pose a threat to the safety and well-being of others, aliens who are criminals, human rights violators, spies, terrorists, war criminals, fugitives from justice, and finally, aliens who would likely become a public charge and or work illegally, thereby providing unfair competition for American workers, either displacing Americans altogether or suppressing and even driving down wages and a broad spectrum of career paths, because labor, after all, is a commodity, not unlike diamonds or petroleum or water or any other commodity. Classic economics kick in, and we wind up with that age-old philosophy of supply and demand. As the supply of any commodity goes up, all things being equal, the value of that commodity goes down. By flooding the American labor pool with millions upon millions of foreign workers, the value of labor has gone down, the middle class is being decimated, poverty is becoming more and more common, and we are in a downward spiral economically, and we are in a downward spiral from the perspectives of public safety, the perspective of national security. And it was an issue that was addressed by Donald Trump just last night. But before we get to Trump and the convention and his acceptance speech, I want to remind you about a couple of websites I very much would like for you to visit. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, I'm proud to have been affiliated with a wonderful organization located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. I've been writing for them for years, along with many other writers, focusing on the impact that uncontrolled immigration has had on the environment in California, whether we're talking about the economics, the impact on health, on health care or education, or public safety. Big issue. It's not only about California. What's happening in California is clearly happening around the United States. And indeed, their perspective is not just limited to California, but it's their base of operations, if you will. And really, California has been the starting point for so many of the problems of immigration because of that huge border that they share with Mexico. But, you know, Mexico is not the only place that we're getting illegal aliens from. It's from the whole world. In fact, every state, as I like to point out, is a border state, but California has been focused or has been the focal point of so much attention, one of the so-called border states, but in reality, all 50 states are. So just file that little note in the back of your head and always keep it handy. Always remember, it's not just about Mexico or Latinos or the Mexican border. It's about people coming to America from other countries, either illegally from day one or violating the terms of their admission by overstaying visas, taking jobs they're not supposed to take, committing crimes. We can go down the whole litany. It's about protecting American lives, American jobs, national security. That's what our borders and immigration laws are about. There's a lot of people feeding at the trough, exploiting foreign workers and, as a consequence, exploiting Americans who now have to compete with foreign workers willing to work for substandard wages under substandard conditions, and that ultimately forces American workers to work for substandard wages under substandard conditions. Lots of exploitation going around, and incredibly, the open borders anarchists have succeeded in convincing far too many Americans for far too long that it's somehow a matter of bigotry to simply say, let's keep criminals out of America. Let's keep foreign workers out of America because we have far too many Americans who desperately would love a job and can't find one. We have roughly 95 million Americans of working age who are not part of the labor force. That's nearly half of all adult Americans. If anybody thinks this is reasonable, you need a checkup from the neck up. This is an act of national suicide. So I write for capsweb.org. I write for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the wonderful David Horowitz Freedom Center. I write for The Social Contract, and most recently, I have begun writing for Life Zet, LifeZette, Life Zet, and their spinoff column on immigration and politics is Polizet, P as in Peter, O-L-I-Z-E-T-T-E. So I generally write now for four websites, very happy to do it, great organizations, all four of them. Capsweb.org is the one where I've been the longest, and I'm very happy to do this. We need to have national dialogue on the issue, and the dialogue must be fact-based. And one of the mythologies that has evolved out of this deal is how immigration enforcement advocates are right-wing, Looney Tune wingnuts. So let's dispel it. I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, has gone off the rails. They aren't Democrats. They aren't liberals. They call themselves progressives. I think they're regressive. They're going backwards. They're going in the opposite direction from where America needs to be. And the chaos and the crime and the poverty and the threats to national security keep multiplying. And so while I'm registered as a Democrat, I've always voted as an independent. I think both political parties are corrupt organizations. And you saw it with Donald Trump, and you saw it with Ted Cruz attacking Trump, members of the Republican Party who should know better. And if you're adherent to Ted Cruz, before you get your blood pressure up, I want you to understand something. Early on, I had problems with Ted Cruz. He was the guy that was calling for a 500% increase, 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas for high-tech workers, computer programmers, engineers, scientists, and technicians. I want you to stop and think about something. The steady drumbeat that we have been hearing from both Ted Cruz and the Democrats, this is both sides of the aisle, folks, make no mistake, was that America does not turn out the scientists, the engineers, the programmers we desperately need, as Gates said when he testified before Chuck Schumer's committee, the Senate Immigration Subcommittee. I believe Schumer was chairman at the time, but he certainly went on to become chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee. He was the gang leader of the Gang of Eight. I call them the eight gangsters pushing comprehensive reform for immigration. There was nothing comprehensive about it, except it would virtually leave no illegal alien behind. But, you know, along comes Bill Gates and says, well, we're turning away the world's best and brightest precisely when we need them the most. Folks, we have a name for the world's best and brightest, and they are already here. We call them Americans. We call them Americans. If you saw the recent incredible success in getting a space probe to Jupiter, the Juno satellite, think about it. It is not operating on nuclear power, but huge solar cells. It is as big as a basketball court. They had to thread the needle with this massive spacecraft, getting a gravity boost from Earth on its way to Jupiter. Amazing stuff. No other country has done this stuff. And when you look at the scientists, these are Americans of every ethnicity, but they're Americans. New Horizons went to Pluto. Unbelievable. The edge of, I can't say really the edge of the solar system, because there's the Oort cloud, and even beyond the Oort cloud, the Kuiper belt, the Oort cloud that goes on. But the point is, it went way out. It takes hours, hours for the signals to reach Earth. And they were able to thread that needle and get that space probe, New Horizons, to Pluto and weave it between Pluto's moons. I mean, think about that kind of unbelievable achievement. These were Americans. It was Americans who broke the sound barrier first. It was Americans who, in fact, were celebrating the anniversary of Apollo 11, first men to land on the moon and return safely to Earth. And there were follow-up flights, and no country yet other than America has ever sent astronauts to the moon. We did it. The world's best and brightest. How many more stories do you need to read about thousands of American programmers being fired only to be replaced by programmers from India, China, and other countries? How many more stories do you need to read about those Americans who are being fired being told, by the way, if you want that severance package, you will train your replacement? If they were that incompetent, you wouldn't let them anywhere near their replacements. The only thing exceptional about foreign workers is they work for exceptionally low wages under exceptionally adverse conditions. This is exploitation. This is not the American dream, and this is not the America that I was born into almost seven decades ago. This is madness. We are trashing America and Americans, and it's both political parties, and along came Donald Trump and said, what are we doing? And he made immigration the signature issue. And I find it remarkable, because I remember just one or two campaigns back when the news moderator, it might have been Schaefer over at CBS, I think it was him, who said, we've got so many questions about immigration, we're going to ask one question. And I thought, one question? See, immigration isn't a single issue, but it most certainly is a singular issue. It impacts national security. It impacts public safety. It impacts public health. It impacts health care, education, unemployment, the economy, the environment. It impacts. We lock our doors not because we're antisocial, but because we are prudent. Our borders are supposed to serve the same purpose. It's our first and last line of defense against transnational criminals and international terrorists. And if you think it's xenophobic or unfair to say we're not going to allow criminals into America, we're not going to allow terrorists into America, if that's xenophobia, then don't bother listening to my program because you're beyond the reach of reason or sanity or fact. Countries exist if they're decent and moral countries, if they are decent and moral. They exist to look out for the safety and well-being of their citizens. That is why countries have armies. Many countries have armies that are called their defense forces. Israel calls their military the Israeli Defense Forces. Japan does something very similar. Armies exist to defend the citizens of the country. From what? From enemies from around the world. Think about that. The reason that they exist is to keep the enemy's soldiers from gaining access to the country they protect. In a very real sense, our military is in the business of border security, but they do it at a distance. They do it at a distance. Think of that Air Force, I'm sorry, the Navy commercial. And I love that commercial, and I love the military. And as part of the Drug Task Force, as a federal agent for 30 years, I work closely with the military on numerous occasions. I have many friends in the military. But the Navy comes out with this wonderful commercial. To get to you, they've got to get through us. And they show these widening circles of Navy personnel, from pilots to SEALs, to sailors and on and on, and all the vessels and all the different jobs they have. That's not accurate. Sounds good. Yeah, the Navy stands between us and the ever-growing Chinese Navy, and we'll get to talk about that in a moment. They stand between us and perhaps the Iranians or the Russians, if the Russians get a little bit rambunctious. But to prevent terrorists from entering the United States, there was nothing the United States Navy could have done on 9/11 or in the months leading up to 9/11 to have defended America and protected the attacks of 9/11. To come to America, the terrorists are not coming on U-boats. The Germans did that during the Second World War. Not now. The terrorists aren't jumping out of airplanes in the dead of night like commandos, flying rickety DC-3s as we used to see in the old war movies from the Second World War. No, they do fly here very often, but they land on airliners that arrive at international airports. They can also stow away on ships. They can come across the Canadian border. They can come across the Mexican border. And that's how they're coming here, not on military vessels, but on commercial vessels. So this notion that we're going to fight the terrorists overseas and then we don't have to worry about them domestically is nuts. We're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. How many times have you heard that nonsense? Where in the world did 9/11 play out? It played out in Lower Manhattan, short distance from where I live. I'm a New Yorker, lifelong New Yorker. This is my hometown. They wound up bringing an airplane down to Pennsylvania. That was over here. And they wound up flying an airliner into the Pentagon, and that most certainly is over here also. So what exactly does that expression, we're fighting them over there so that we don't have to fight them over here, means? San Bernardino is over here, isn't it? Boston, where the Boston Marathon bombing took place, was over here. And there have been other attacks inside our country, some successful, others thankfully unsuccessful, but they're carrying those attacks out within our borders. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, came here from Pakistan as a 20-year-old student. 20-year-old student. Yeah, when he tried to set off that SUV car bomb, about 6 years ago in the heart of Times Square, the crossroads of the world, our own police commissioner, Ray Kelly, described him as a homegrown terrorist. How on earth is this guy homegrown? At age 20, he came here on a student visa, got involved in an apparent marriage fraud, got a green card, and became a citizen less than a year, as I recall, before he attempted to kill lots of people in Times Square. Homegrown? In whose home? You know, it's lie after lie. It's mythology after mythology. It's attack after attack. And Donald Trump early on looked at the situation, being a pragmatist, and construction workers tend to be that way. I should know, I'm the son of a plumber. My dad was a plumber. Not the repair guy you called for a stuffed drain, although there's nothing wrong with that work either. These are all honest, hard-working American jobs. But my dad worked on construction sites. He worked on the World's Fair back in 1964. Took me with him to work during the summer. It was a fascinating summer. I actually got to go on the Swiss Skyride before the fair opened. They needed people to try it out to make sure it worked right. I became a guinea pig for the Swiss Skyride, and my father said to me, "Don't tell Mom, she'll kill me if she knows you did it." My mother, typical Jewish mother, would have had a cow if she knew I had gone on the Swiss Skyride before it was officially open to the public. But it was a great summer. I remember bringing soda and running errands for the construction workers on a job about a mile from my house. Best summer of my life. I was 15 years old, and I got to my dad's job on my bicycle. I lost him to cancer when I was 19. I'd give anything for one of those days this summer to go back in time and be on that job with my dad and his buddies. And so when Donald Trump was talking about construction workers, I'll tell you what, I was getting choked up because that's who I grew up around. My dad's friends were all members of the building trades, the bricklayers, the carpenters, the tile guys, steel workers, electricians. These are my dad's friends, hardworking, honest, can-do Americans. And so Trump looked at the situation and said immigration's a big problem. He looked at all the people that were being killed by illegal aliens. And as soon as he said, let's put up a wall to separate America from Mexico, I mean, it's kind of a simplistic view. There's, as I said earlier, 50 border states, but that Mexican border is a problem. The corruption of Mexico is pouring across our border. The violence from Mexico is pouring across our border. The House Judiciary Committee held a hearing about a year ago about how members of Mexican drug cartels were getting political asylum in the United States, some of them fleeing violence that they started in their own country because they were part of the drug trade, some trying to flee from their competitors who want to kill them, others coming here with the idea of hunting down their competitors who came here hiding from them so they can continue their battles on our turf. And when a candidate for the presidency or any American dares to say, let's secure the border, the first thing you hear is racist, nativist, xenophobe. Really? So you lock your door at night because you're antisocial, because you're a misanthrope who hates people? It's amazing. When people ran across the lawn at the White House and some people gained access to the White House, why weren't they invited to dinner? Why couldn't they use the washroom? Maybe the guy just couldn't find a porta potty and just needed to go to the bathroom real badly. With all the talk about who can use bathrooms these days, why couldn't the president of the United States say, oh, the guy came into the White House, maybe he needs a bathroom. Maybe he could use a cup of coffee. Why are there gates surrounding the White House? Why are there heavily armed Secret Service agents guarding the White House and the president? Common sense, because their job is to protect the life and well-being of the President of the United States and his family. How do you protect people when they get into your house? That's what we're talking about. And yet I've been before a bunch of congressional hearings. I remember the late Arlen Specter, when I testified before a Senate hearing, saying that those of us who wanted that border secured suffered, I kid you not, folks, suffered from exophobia. I almost started laughing out loud, thinking, my God, this guy thinks I'm afraid of the letter X. Exophobia. Brilliant. I don't like picking on dead people, but, you know, it was just too unbelievable to pass up the opportunity to tell you. And then he corrected himself and said xenophobia. God help us. If you can't defend your borders, you can't defend your country, you can't defend your people. It's very simple. It's very, very simple. Our borders are our line of defense. And it's not that imaginary red line that Mr. Obama drew in the sand in Syria. If they use biological weapons on their people, and they did, and then Mr. Obama very quietly ignored it, even as people were dying. My father, and it was funny because Trump was talking about it yesterday, was a man of his word. If he shook hands with you on any kind of a deal, that was it. He didn't need 400 pages of paper, didn't need a lawyer, didn't need... He would give his word. His friends were the same way. My neighbors were the same way. They gave their word. And so then you start to listen to all the nonsense that's been going on. And I'm registered as a Democrat because I'm a labor guy. The Democrats, I thought, were supposed to support American workers, and they're not. You've got Hillary Clinton saying, hey, you know, we're going to bring in all these workers, we're going to legalize everybody, and we're going to raise wages. How? How? This is like perpetual motion, you know. It's a fantasy. Jump out the window, and I promise you, I'll help you walk on air. How's that going to turn out? It's a fantasy. And if you just stop and listen, you know, when I was a kid, my mother said to me, if something sounds too good to be true, it's probably not true. Even if, and we can't, you can keep the criminals out and we would know who everybody is and everything is great. Simply by flooding America with authorized foreign workers, you will displace Americans. Right now, we are admitting more foreign workers and the number of new jobs that we're creating. What do you think that does for the average American when suddenly his boss comes to him and says, hey, Charlie, I got this guy from some other country. He's willing to do your job for $150 a week less than you, or $300 a week less than you. Well, now you wind up where you have to make a tough call. Do I quit and there's no jobs to be found? Do I insist that he pay me the rate that he's been paying me and then you get fired and this guy replaces you? Or do you say, okay, if this guy's willing to work for $300 a week less than me, I guess I'll lower my wage requirement so you keep me on the job. And the boss is such a gentleman. He says, I'll make it $200. I'll just cut your pay by $200 because he's a nice guy. Do you understand that that's what's happening across America? And when Donald Trump stood up, he talked about how wages are going down. Senator Jeff Sessions, one of my heroes in the Senate, there aren't many, but he's certainly one of them, a senator from Alabama, talked about how wages are going down. Trump talked about how wages are going down. How do wages go down in America? That's never happened before. Not when costs are going up. Wages are going down because of pressure created by the admission of millions of foreign workers. And Trump made that point. He made that case. And he talked about the nearly 180,000 criminal aliens that were turned loose by this administration and then victimized more people. He talked about the Syrian refugees who can't be vetted. But something interesting happened that you probably don't know about. Because this morning, a good friend of mine who used to be the Democrat counsel for the Immigration Subcommittee in the House of Representatives sent out an email, and it blew me away. We worked closely together, and in fact, I testified for him once. When the topic was alien smuggling, and I convinced him that, and I convinced Sheila Jackson Lee, who was the ranking Democrat at the time, I said, you know, you really need to look at, when you're looking at alien smuggling, you need to look at visa fraud because that's a way for aliens to come here. And so they included that, actually made it the centerpiece of the hearing. And we've worked very closely. He's a really a bright guy. I don't know why he's not a law professor, really. He's retired from practicing law for the government. And really, he'd make a perfect law professor. He's very, very bright and really gets it. And we have wonderful conversations. But he sent something out this morning that blew me away, and it was a transcript of Donald Trump's speech. Now, if you're wondering why I'm making a big deal about a transcript of a speech, because those things are available everywhere for every leader who speaks. They're out there. You know, and I've testified before Congress. I have to provide them with prepared testimony, and poof, it's up there on the internet. You could read it. You know, you could find my prepared testimony. It's posted on the internet. But what was unique about Donald Trump's testimony, make a note of this and tell this to your doubting friends, every single page of his prepared speech was loaded with footnotes, provided, was substantiated by a footnote. Because I guess he anticipated that the liars on the other side, the panicky ones, the ones that are scared to death that the party's over, you know, so many politicians in Washington are looking at Trump, I suspect, the way that Al Capone looked at Elliot Ness when Elliot Ness showed up. My God, the sheriff is here and I'm screwed. That's why there's panic in Mudville. And believe me, it is Mudville, Washington, D.C. What a swamp. Boy, could it not be more appropriate that the Capitol is built on landfill? Seriously. So Donald Trump comes along, and he's about to upset their very lucrative apple cart. He's talking about immigration and the fact that we have all these people running the border, and we've got all these people overstaying their visas, and we need to hunt them down and get rid of them. It's so radical what he was saying that in March of 2002, 6 months after 9/11, to the day, to everyone's horror, embarrassment, I don't know what to say, two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta, the ringleader of this operation that killed so many innocent people, and Marwan Eshehi, another one of these nitwits, had been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after the attacks. So everybody knew two things about them. Number one, they were terrorists. Number two, they were dead. 6 months later, they get permission to go to flight school. I got a call from Sheila Jackson Lee's counsel back then, who said to me, would you like to come testify? This is what just happened. I didn't even know what had just happened. I almost drove my car into the tree next to my driveway that day. I'll never forget it. I just had an argument with my alleged congressman, Anthony Weiner, you know, Chuck Schumer's buddy boy. And my son actually worked for Weiner, my oldest son, as an intern. And I could tell you he treated those kids like garbage, not surprisingly. So I just had this big argument with Anthony Weiner. I was the PA president, the Parents Association president of my daughter's school. He was one of many politicians who showed up. Just an infuriating, snotty guy. Arrogant beyond words. Arrogant. You know, I've met Senator Jeff Sessions many times. He's quoted me from the floor of the Senate. He's a decent human being. He's down to earth. He's a regular guy. My good friend Lou Barletta, Congressman Steve King. I can go down a list of members of Congress who are decent. I had worked with Senator Al D'Amato, and he brought in Rudy Giuliani to create what became the aggravated felon reentry law to make unlawful reentry by criminal aliens a 20-year offense. We got that law passed. Back in the 80s, in 1994, the full power of the law kicked in, and I got to make the first arrest in New York, as far as I know, for that violation. It was a Dominican drug dealer, and the guy got 5 additional years in jail simply because he had been deported and reentered illegally, and he was a criminal alien with an extensive felony background. And so, you know, here I was all fired up. I pull into my driveway, and I get a call. You know, two of the dead terrorists got permission to go to flight school. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And at that hearing, every member of Congress pounded that dais and demanded to know how this can happen, and they all said, we're going to secure America's borders, and we're not going to let anybody in if we don't know who they are, and if someone gets by them, we're going to hunt them down like the dogs they are, and we're going to arrest them, and we're going to throw them out, and we're going to use immigration to make us safe, because immigration is the key to all of this. And that's why they wanted me to testify at that hearing. Not only was I there, Ziegler, the commissioner of immigration, was there, Rudy Decker, the guy from the Florida flight school, was there, and this guy who was there from the computer company that had been contracted to send out notices on behalf of immigration was there trying to explain why they sent that notice out. But they brought me in as a former immigration agent. Actually, I was a current agent. I lost my job right after that. The truth in government will set you free, but it got resolved okay, but it was a long string of events. But I was brought in to testify as to what was wrong with the system. How do we fix this? And if you go to C-SPAN or michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org, look at my articles. You know, you'll see a link. This hearing is permanently posted. Watch the hearing. Listen to the promises. listen to the rightful indignation of the members of Congress from both political parties. How dare they do this? Immigration is the issue. Immigration is the key. Failures of immigration. We've got to redo immigration. Immigration is a problem. God, I wish I had a dollar for every time someone said immigration at that hearing. And within 2 or 3 years, I'm testifying at a hearing. I've done a bunch of them. And I said, well, you know, if you look at the nexus between immigration and terrorism, and half the people, especially on the Democratic side, had a cow. Oh, no, Mr. Cutler, they said to me. Immigration has nothing to do with terrorism, and terrorism has nothing to do with immigration. Those are two separate issues. Folks, I have to tell you, I almost fell out of my chair as I sat at that hearing listening to this from members of Congress who had promised me and every other American 2 years earlier that they were going to make sure that this failed immigration system would protect America against terrorists. And suddenly, they were all up in arms because they said, well, we've got to fix this so that we don't have a threat of terrorism. Immigration has absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. Don't you even think of it. Don't say it. It doesn't exist. It's not happening. Panic set in. Immigration has nothing to do with terrorists. The 9/11 Commission and its staff made it clear that if immigration had been successful, they would have kept the terrorists out of the country. That's why running the border is a huge deal. It's not minor. Oh, they're undocumented. No, they're uninspected. They're trespassing. Go to the White House the same way and say you're an undocumented guest. See how quickly Secret Service turns their guns on you. Undocumented my backside. So these same members of Congress, these very same members of Congress who wanted me to tell them how to fix immigration so we would never again give terrorists permission to go to flight school, looked me square in the eye at that goddamn hearing and said to me, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism, Mr. Cutler, and terrorism has nothing to do with immigration. Holy smoke. When I was a kid, there was a movie called The Invaders from Mars. For those of you old enough to remember it, you're going to chuckle. Those of you too young to have seen it, go look it up. The premise was this kid goes to sleep, and he has this dream that a flying saucer lands behind his house, and the aliens in the saucer, the extraterrestrials, let me be careful because, you know, when I use the word alien, everybody starts shaking and rattling and rolling. The extraterrestrials gained control of the police chief and everybody else, including this kid's parents, by implanting a little nub at the base of their skull that controlled their brain. When I heard this nonsense from these members of Congress, including one member of Congress who had invited me to testify about immigration and terrorism, suddenly saying there's no nexus, I was convinced that if I could get up close and look at the back of their necks, they would have little nubs sticking out of the bases of their skulls. This is delusional. This is absolutely delusional. And the first step in problem solving is to recognize the problem. So Donald Trump stands up and says, let's secure the border. And I hope he really means more than just the Mexican border. And I hope that when he talks about the visa overstays, that he comes to the understanding that we need to hire many, 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 many more immigration agents and many more immigration judges. Right now, there are fewer than 300 judges for the whole country. Arrest an illegal alien on those rare occasions, and that alien might have to go 2 years before seeing a judge, and I guarantee you they're not going to hold him in custody for 2 years. They're going to let that guy go or that gal go, never to be seen again anyway. This is failure by design. And when people say, well, we can't afford to do all these things, we can't afford not to. We're losing hundreds of billions of dollars a year in remittances, money being wired home by foreign workers. So we lose the multiplier effect. You know, we had the economic stimulus package. We borrowed against our children's future to pump money into the economy, to stimulate the economy. When money is wired out of our economy, the exact opposite happens. Every dollar that leaves America basically takes $3 of commerce with it. That's the multiplier effect. And then you could look at wage suppression, and you could look at how many Americans wind up on welfare. So instead of being tax-paying consumers, they become dependent on costly safety net programs through no fault of their own. They stop paying taxes. They're drawing money out of the economy, and they lose their disposable income, so they can't make any purchases. So the economy gets hammered. The U.S. economy gets hammered. American workers get hammered. But the people that make the money through cheap labor and exploitation of cheap labor, literally and figuratively, folks, are making out like bandits. These are Hillary's friends. And I suspect they're Ted Cruz's friends, too. Because if you listen closely to what Ted Cruz had to say when he made the non-endorsement speech for Donald Trump, he said that he wanted trade deals that were helpful to American agriculture and American manufacturing, or U.S. agriculture. I forget the exact words. I don't have the script in front of me. But that was what he had said when he spoke. And everybody said, yay, stop. What Donald Trump had said was that the trade agreements we enter into have to put American workers first. Do you understand the difference? It's American agriculture that supported NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. What NAFTA did was to enable ADM and a number of other huge agricultural conglomerates to dump unbelievable tonnage of wheat and corn and other produce onto the Mexican economy. Mexican peasant farmers could not possibly match the price that ADM and these other conglomerates would charge. It drove the Mexican farmers into bankruptcy. Many of them lost their homes that had been held by their families for generations. That's how America, by the way, builds up resentment around the world, by kowtowing to scum like ADM and the others. And then what happened? They said, well, if I lost my farm, I have to support my children. They came north, and they came to America. And if you look, shortly after NAFTA was when the huge numbers of illegal aliens from Mexico began surging across our southwest border. And when Ted Cruz said, we're going to help American agriculture, I don't think he meant American migrant farmers. And we have American migrants, by the way. But he was talking, I'm sure, about ADM. Now, if I'm wrong, Ted Cruz, if he's listening, you're welcome to contradict me. But that's what I hear when I hear American agriculture and American manufacturing. Yeah, companies that have moved their companies overseas. Companies that are looking to import H-1B and other temporary work visa aliens to undermine the wages of their workers and screw them out of their livelihoods. There's a difference between supporting supposed American companies and supporting American workers. Now, if Mr. Cruz is listening, you're welcome to tell me I'm wrong, Ted. I don't think you will, because I think I'm getting you right. I think I hear you loud and clear. I'm a Democrat because I'm a labor guy. When I was a kid, the difference between Democrats and Republicans was that the Republicans stood for the worker, business owners, and the Democrats stood for the workers. And both sides have legitimate desires and legitimate goals and legitimate concerns. Obviously, companies want to pay less money for anything and everything. The less they pay, the more they profit. If they pay less in wages, they increase their profit margin. If they pay less for energy, they increase their profit margin. If they pay less in taxes, they increase. It's all about this balance. What do we have to do to minimize our overhead, minimize all of our costs to maximize profits? That's what companies are in business for, to make money. Period. I don't care what the company is. I don't care if it's a transportation company, a pharmaceutical company, an alcohol company, a car maker, a stereo maker, a computer maker. They're all in the same business. That business is profit. That's what capitalism is about. That's fine. I'm okay with it. Believe me. But we got to have some moral compass guiding our decisions, not screwing over American workers and American families and ultimately America itself. Because I have a quaint idea that for America to do well, Americans must do well. And that was what Trump was speaking to, unless I was hearing a different speech. But this morning, what did we hear? Oh, dark and gloomy perspectives from Trump. He's going to scare people, and that's going to divide America. If speaking the truth scares people, then there's something terribly wrong. I was diagnosed with cancer 15 years ago. Thank God I'm okay. I certainly have lots more that I want to do, and I want to see my children and grandchildren and be with them and my wife. And we all have our dreams, and staying alive is at the basis of everything else that follows. Plus, I haven't aggravated my quota yet, so I need to stay alive to accomplish that very important goal. But it was a scary and dark prognosis when I got that phone call from my doctor telling me, Mr. Cutler, I have some pretty bad news this morning. You have prostate cancer, and it's aggressive. Having lost both of my parents and my first wife to cancer, I thought this was it. But he said to me, we're catching it early enough. I believe I can save your life. I went for a second opinion, and this brilliant surgeon did my surgery for me, and here I am 15 years later. But the reality was a very scary prognosis. Donald Trump delivers a fact-based prognosis, and he's accused of being what? Dark and gloomy and scary. Dark and gloomy and scary. Isn't that remarkable? It's the truth, folks, that's dark and gloomy and scary. And how did we get to this point? Nearly 8 years of Barack Obama, a number of those years with Hillary Clinton at the helm of the State Department. That's how we got here. That's how we got here. Nature abhors a violence. We withdrew from the world. Our military has been weakened. We're unable to do what we need to do. You have a president who draws lines in the sand, and when the adversary crosses the line, he's looking somewhere else so he doesn't have to see them crossing the line. Don't tell me they crossed the line. I don't want to hear it. I didn't see it. It didn't happen. Yeah, it did happen. No. Don't tell me. And then this evening, I'm watching the horrific events unfolding in Munich and Germany, and you see the SWAT teams entering a mall where there have been shootings. And the topic on the news turned to the release of terrorists from Guantanamo. And you have to wonder, and again, this might not even be ISIS terrorists. We don't know yet, and I don't want to get ahead of the story. But there have been ISIS attacks and ISIS-inspired attacks, and there will be more. This is as inevitable as sunrise tomorrow, unfortunately. So you have to ask yourself, are any of these terrorists who've killed people in Europe, or perhaps here, people that had been in custody in Guantanamo and were released by this administration, not because there was a jailbreak or one of our valiant soldiers screwed up. No, they're good. They're good. It took the commander-in-chief to spring the bad guys from that jail. This was an executive order jailbreak, just as we've seen, and Trump pointed out, 180,000 criminal aliens, nearly, released who then went on to commit more crimes. Trey Gowdy had a hearing about this. And he had said, I think that it was Lamar Smith at that hearing who made the point, that in just 3 years, the administration had released over 100,000 criminal aliens with serious felony convictions. And after being released, they went on to commit well over 100 more murders and thousands of assaults, including sexual assault. Why are we releasing criminals? You have Mr. Obama releasing drug deals. Oh, they're nonviolent. On the federal level, you don't go to federal level narcotics violations with a joint in your back pocket. That's state and city, and we can have that conversation about if jail is the best place for somebody caught with a joint in his back pocket or a pocketbook from some young lady. Maybe that's not the best way to go, and I would tend to agree. But when you're talking about federal, you're generally talking about mega quantities. And when you're dealing with that much drugs, you have to be armed because this is a violent business. There's no gentleman agreements here. Okay? These people are playing for keeps. So we're releasing drug dealers. Drugs are pouring into the poor neighborhoods. I've been writing about this for a bunch of websites. In fact, I highlighted the fact that this is really where the poverty comes from. You have kids living in neighborhoods where there's no opportunities to get a job of consequence. Illegal aliens are taking the bottom-rung jobs that used to provide kids with that first job so they could start to build a resume and build on that resume to get a good job ultimately. I've been working since I was, well, actually 11, if you count my days as a babysitter for my parents' tenant who lived downstairs in this two-family house. But My first actual job was working in a kosher deli in Brooklyn. Many of my friends worked in restaurants, in the kitchens. And today, you go into 90% of these restaurants, there's illegal aliens working in those kitchens. So kids don't have those opportunities. They never get that job. They never come to understand that you can make an honest dollar, as the saying goes. So when you have kids making money by doing street crime, whether it's selling a couple of joints or selling some stolen property, whatever it is that they're doing, that kid grows up believing that police officers are their adversaries, not their allies. So when that kid is encountered by a cop, he gets hinky, as we would say, gets raised up, gets nervous. The cop sees the kid getting nervous. He's now worked up because he doesn't know what's going to happen. And bad mistakes are made. Does that mean that there aren't some cops who absolutely do the wrong thing? No, there are, just like every other profession. My friend Don Rosenberg and I were having this conversation. I said, you know, I'd love to know how many people die because of medical malpractice. And he started laughing. He says, wow, what a coincidence. Just a couple days ago, Mike, I started looking at that myself. I had the same thought. I said, did you come up with a number? He said, yeah. Sit down, folks. My friend Don Rosenberg came up with a number that every year, I believe it was over 230,000 people die in America because of medical malpractice. That number is far, 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 far larger than the number of wrongful police shootings, I assure you. Not every doctor should be a doctor. Not every airline pilot should be an airline pilot. Not every former Secretary of State should be the next president either, for that matter. But, you know, we've got to weed out people who have no business in any profession, especially where safety and lives are on the line, whether it's medical practitioners or bad cops. But I had the privilege of working with the NYPD and many other police departments, and I have to tell you, as a group of people, law enforcement officers rock. They are among the best of the best. They are trustworthy. They are no less patriotic than the men and women in the armed forces. They have put their lives on the line each and every day to keep us safe, to restore our law and order and justice. And so this idea about doing what we do on one hand, or that the administration does, and then talks about the role of poverty in all this, adding millions more workers into a labor pool that can't find work is not going to help Americans find work. It's not going to help wages go up. It's not going to provide children with the opportunities they should have in their own damn country. I don't care what Hillary promises. When someone makes you a promise and you know that the facts contradict what they're telling you, you're being lied to. That's as fundamental as it gets. This is a con game, and we are being conned. We're being conned out of jobs. And Americans are being conned out of their lives. It doesn't get worse than that. And I look at the news reports, oh, Trump gloom and doom, and it's depressing. Well, if the facts depress you, there is a solution. Change direction. You know, I mean, how hard is it to figure this one out? He doesn't offer solutions. Really? He made it very clear, that immigration was the problem. Mass immigration was flooding the labor market with cheap labor. So what's the solution? Stop the H-1B visa program, you know, the program that Ted Cruz was in love with. Stop it. Hire Americans. And if no Americans can do the work, train them. See, this argument, well, if we give people an H-1B visa, or if we educate foreign students in our schools, and right now we have nearly a 500,000 foreign students in our schools studying the STEM curriculum, and by the way, China sends us most of those students. China is our adversary increasingly, building its nuclear fleet, building its stealth fighters, building an artificial island in the South China Sea and warning our military to stay away or else. Buzzing our airplanes. Yeah, that's what friends do to one another, right? This is how allies treat one another. So we're educating their engineers who are building the nuclear navy for China and all these other weapon systems. And who do you think they're expecting to ultimately go up against? You know, pretty obvious, isn't it? And what Trump was talking about makes sense. If immigration's the problem, then stop it. If you can't vet people, don't let them in. If someone knocks on the door and you say, who's there, and the guy's wearing a mask, I don't think you're going to let him in. And Hillary, as Trump rightfully pointed out, wants to have a 500% plus increase in the number of Syrian refugees. And we were told by James Comey that we can't vet any of them. We were told by Mike Steinbeck, Comey's assistant director for intelligence for the FBI in Washington, we can't vet them. We can't figure out who they are. Look at what just a handful of terrorists can do. Each and every terrorist is a potential catastrophe. And you have an administration that's admitting refugees that can't be vetted, and Hillary Clinton promising to increase the pace of entries, admissions, and complaining that Obama has done too much to enforce immigration law. And it's my understanding, and we'll have to wait and see what happens this coming week, that they're going to have illegal aliens addressing the Democratic Convention. We're going to bestow an honor upon people who are trespassing on America. It's one thing to say, we're going to have some newly naturalized citizens speak. Fine, that's cool. Welcome to America. My mother was a naturalized citizen. My first wife's family came here after the Holocaust. Her parents, her mother was in the concentration camps. Her dad was on the run. His family was decimated by the Nazi bastards. So they were naturalized Americans. Fine. Have naturalized Americans speak at the convention. I'm there with you. I agree. But illegal aliens? So why bother coming legally? If you got on the Jersey Turnpike and you were going to drive to Washington, and instead of giving you a choice, you want easy pass or cash, if they gave you a third lane that said free, no speed limit, how much of a genius do you have to be to figure out that you have to be a jerk to pay to ride on the highway? When you're celebrating your convention, whereby you're hoping to pick the next president, and you have illegal aliens addressing the convention, and they're being treated like royalty, what a slap in the face for legal immigrants and people who naturalized and followed the law. And, of course, what a slap in the face for Americans. And then apparently they're going to have people speaking from Black Lives Matter and people who claim that their family members fell victim to bad shootings, and I'm not sure that they even have verified whether or not what they're saying is accurate. But it's my understanding there won't be anybody at the convention who was related to police officers who were killed in the line of duty, or perhaps federal agents who were killed in the line of duty. I lost a couple of very, very close friends in law enforcement when they were shot by some scum. My friend Everett Hatcher, DEA agent, was shot by Gus Faraci, an Italian-American mobster. There were others who died because of criminals. Listen, folks, this one-sided, we're taking the sides of the victims of law enforcement is where Hillary's going with this. We're going to reward people who trespass on America. There's something terribly wrong with this picture. In any event, I want to thank you for joining me this evening. Hope you'll join me again next week. We'll have the next convention coming up to speak about. But meanwhile, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Please go to capsweb.org. Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract, and now I'm happy to say go to LifeZet, LifeZettE. But meanwhile, folks, please get involved with the process. You know, I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport, and there's many more elections to be held beyond the presidential election. Every seat in the House of Representatives is up for grabs, and roughly a third of the Senate seats are up for grabs. Please, folks, get involved. This is not only about you, but this is about your country, and it's about our children and about their children. Please get involved. It's an obligation that we as Americans have. We get to pick who will represent us, who will look out for our best hopes and dreams and aspirations. And again, I remind you, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.